Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC has escaped the Groundhog Day existence and has ended the Helton era.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raina Troy Radio. This is the CarCast after USC's 35-31 loss to the BYU Cougars at the Coliseum. We're going to talk over the game and so much more here in this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, Raina Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/RainaTroy. Be sure to subscribe to wherever you subscribe to podcasts. We are there. Our email address is ramtroy@fansided.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1USC, Second Whispering Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. It has been a little bit of a weird week. We weren't able to record during the week. It was a short week, and with your day job, my day job, family stuff, I ended up not being able to go to the game tonight. We both watched it here back at the old studio. And yet SC goes to this one, playing one of their toughest opponents all season, the number 13, BYU Cougars, coming into the Coliseum a week after SC was just thoroughly, destroyed on defense. And lose by 29 points to UCLA. Here they are, and they put together probably their, I don't want to say the most complete game of the year. It was not that. I wouldn't even say this was the most encouraging performance this team could have put together. But I think given the situation of last week, what people expected, what people were expecting out of the last two games of the year, this week and then next week, up at Cal, I think SC surpassed expectations by playing a game in which they had a chance to win it there in the final minute, coming down and ultimately, poetically, falling short on their biggest drive of the year, the drive stalling at the worst time possible.
Yeah, I feel strange right now. 'Cause there was a point in this game that you and I were having a discussion, or at least I was having a discussion in my mind, of what is the earliest we can start the CarCast and get away with it?
Well, at one point it was 21-10 BYU going into the half, their final drive. And BYU was, you know, moving the ball easily on SC in the beginning of the game. If they score there and go up 28-10 going into the half, I don't doubt this is a game in which BYU drops 50 and they probably win like 55-17 or something like that, right? Like, that's what it felt like this game was going to trend in that direction. And SC gets an interception right before the half. They come down. They settle for a field goal. That's fine. They just need points.
They cut it to one score.
They need to cut it to one score. So it's 21-13. They come out of the half. They force a interception right away. It's taken away for a really questionable roughing the passer call. BYU scores anyways. And it's easy to think, well, okay, this is the backbreaker that now SC is really going to feel boo-hoo about themselves because they had the game and now it's just completely gone against them. But even beyond that, they withstood it and they showed heart. They showed what they had done last year.
Yeah.
Last year was the most redeeming thing about the 2020 Trojans was that they had a hell of a lot of heart and they did not give up. And yes, they pulled games out of their ass that they probably shouldn't have won. But you have to have a certain amount of metal to do so, right?
Yeah.
And they did. And tonight was the first time we had seen any of that metal. I guess maybe you could say since the Washington State game, but that was, you know, first half metal that was shown in the second quarter.
That was decades ago.
It feels like forever ago. But
yeah, no, it was exactly the opposite of what we've seen from this USC team week after week after week after week.
Yeah.
We saw this team either give up or not take the fight to opponents that were vulnerable, like ASU and Notre Dame.
Yep. I mean, they did the hallmarks of all the things that they've done in the bad games. They did that. They stalled on drives.
They
gave up big plays downfield. Like,
yeah.
They did all those things, but it just...
It wasn't a game...
It didn't sink the ship.
It wasn't a game... The performance was very much this team, but this team is who they are.
Right.
What I think was really encouraging was that for the first time... This team, flawed as they are, they didn't collapse. They kept finding sparks. I thought that it was arguably the best performance by the offensive line in a long, long time in terms of...
The running game looked good.
...opening up holes. And you asked me a question in the fourth quarter, like, what would Keontae have done against this defense today?
Yeah.
And
Malapaya looked great.
I love Vi Malapaya. I think,
but Malapaya is not Keontae Ingram.
Yeah, and Barlow was running the ball very well, but neither of those guys are Keontae Ingram. And yeah, Keontae could have. I mean, the two guys collectively they came away with 210 yards total. Malapaya had 99 yards. Barlow had 81. Both of them looked very good. I think Keontae Ingram easily gets over 100 yards if he's given carries. And I just think it was exactly what I needed from this team to give me some hope that this isn't the 5-year rebuild that some people want to talk about. I've always thought that this team still had too much talent to act like the right guy couldn't come in and take hold of the talent, the core guys, and win, you know, 8 games right away. And this game, I think, was proof of exactly what my gut feeling was, is that when you have a team that has Jackson Dart, who in this game looked like he had that Sam Darnold essence of just being able to go out there and make plays, obviously still raw, still a young guy, still has to get put together in a proper scheme and proper coaching and all that kind of stuff. But he showed so many flashes. You know, I've said all along that USC has running backs. They have dudes. Like, I mean, even this offensive line, you see what this offensive line does in this game. Do I think they're going to suddenly be able to turn around next year and take on the Utahs or Notre Dames of the world? No, I don't think so. But there's no reason you couldn't be competent and put together a decent run game against most of the opponents that are going to be on your schedule that aren't going to be a crazy amount of, you know, USC gets Rice and Fresno State.
Keontae Ingram rushed for like 100 and was it 130 at Notre Dame this year?
Yeah. I don't think that USC is so far away from being able to be competitive. I think they definitely need a lot of work to be on a national level. But to be competitive in the Pac-12, no, I don't think it should take the new coach very long. And I think whoever the new coach is can look at this game. I put this on Twitter. You look at this game and think, you know what? There are dudes that I can work with on this team. I can work with Kalen Bullock in that secondary. I can work with Jackson Dart. I can work with Lake McCree. I didn't get to see Michael Trigg or Malcolm Epps. But like, I think you tweeted that like USC has some tight ends here. New coach could do a lot with these tight ends. So it's weird because I was very uninvested in this game. And then I was ready to just cut out and start car casting at the end of the third quarter. And then USC put up a fight.
Yeah, and we've talked about before that you can look at some of these games and think that SC could have gotten more out of it. The Notre Dame game, the ASU game, that SC could have gotten more out of those games, but they still lost those games by double digits, right? And more out of it maybe doesn't mean you win those games. It might mean that you take them to the end like you took this game to the end.
Yeah.
But I think a team that's better coached and is more prepared thoroughly wins this one.
Yeah.
And then those games against Notre Dame and ASU are like flip a coin flips.
Yeah.
And at that point, you just, like, you switch the records of those games and you're not incredibly that far off of where you need to be. You know, as a starting point in year one of a transition, obviously you're not anywhere close to competing on a national level, like you said, but you got to start somewhere. And this game was an example of that you could. Even as flawed as this team was in this game, they were right there with the number 13 team in the country.
And this, yeah, and this BYU team is no joke. They have gone undefeated in the Pac-12.
Algiers is insane.
Yeah. And that's it's frustrating because I had pretty much lost all emotional attachment to this team until the fourth quarter of this game. And then suddenly I'm sitting there like clapping and like going like, hey, that's a good play. And there you go. And thinking about like, what do you need to do and how do you want to do it? Like getting into watching the game, being engaged, watching the game. I haven't really done that very much this year because there hasn't been a lot of opportunities to do that this year. So it's kind of annoying that I get engaged again and then that final sequence happens and it's a very frustrating final sequence. But it's also, that's what this team is. That's what this offense is. Like, you're not going to change overnight. You still are those flaws. The important thing, I think, from this game is the individual players, they came to play. They gave USC a shot in this game. And that's all I want from this season. Like, from this season, when you lost your head coach after week two, all that. All I would have wanted. Win-losses don't really matter in this context. It's how hard are you fighting? And I don't think this team had fought hard enough.
If they had played this game over and over again all season, it would have been...
They would be bold.
Oh, it would have been a watchable season.
And if they lost every game just the same...
And then who cares?
It would have been, you know, frustrating in a different way.
Sure. But
it wouldn't have been embarrassing.
Right, yeah. And this ends up being a game in which you look at it and you go, you know, we talked about last week that SC's offense and defense are incompatible. The offense is so jittery in the sense of they're very inconsistent. Well, they're consistently inconsistent, right? Because they move the ball within the 40s with ease. And then they get the ball to like the 30 or the 20 and they suddenly can't figure out how to keep moving it at that same pace. And they stall and settle for field goals over and over and over again. They did that against BYU plenty. The last drive of the game stalls, right?
Like the first drive of the game stalls.
Yeah, and yeah, the drive of the half stalls. Like you see this constantly, right? Like these things happen. This is what this USC offense is. And that you cannot, that an offense like that cannot thrive with the defense that gives up big plays, big demoralizing plays, because you need an offense that is going to back up the defense, and the defense is going to back up the offense. And these two sides just don't give each other reasons to feel good about each other. And I'm not saying that you need to be have a perfect defense for a perfect offense and all those sort of things, but look at in this game. The defense, even while being gashed for plenty of times, which they were, they made some big plays. And all this team needed to do was, in addition to getting gashed all those times that they did, make some big plays every now and then.
Force a couple turnovers and have your offense come around and score a couple touchdowns.
Because you're going to give your offense some momentum that way. You're going to give them a feeling of purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not like every single drive that they don't score a touchdown is demoralizing because you know that the defense is going to go up and allow seven on the next drive. Now you have some hope. And now when you settle for a field goal, it doesn't feel like the end of the world, right? Yeah. Because you know your defense, actually, they might come up with a big sack. Like Chris Steele on that big sack there, right?
Yeah.
They might come up with a big play. They might come up with a big pick in addition to potentially getting gashed downfield, right? And so it's that hope that you see kind of meshes together and allows SC to play in what essentially was not quite a shootout, but, you know.
It felt more back and forth. It
felt back and forth. And to a third party, like, this would be a very enjoyable game to watch.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is all you needed to make a season interesting,
worth watching.
And it, like I said, it doesn't take that many plays to change to make it worth watching. Now, how do you go from making from being a team that's worth watching to one that is worth winning championships? That's a harder jump, and that's one that SC is gonna have to figure out a way to do with the new head coach, whoever that ends up being. But given the way the season has gone, it seemed impossible that they'd put together a watchable game, and here they were. And part of it, we talked about before, that on offense, they needed to just pick a quarterback, right?
Yes.
Just pick a quarterback. They go with Jackson Dart. And the interesting thing, you and I were talking about this during the game, because I was trying to think, okay, could Keaton Slovis have done... Could the offense have been the same with Keaton Slovis in there? I think the answer is yes. However, One of the areas where SC thrives with Jackson Dart, even though he's still not incredibly mobile,
he looked
a lot better than he did against the ASU game a month
confident.
Ago.
He looked more. It didn't necessarily look more mobile, but he looked more confident.
100%. 100%. Yes. And that's an added threat. It's an added threat the BYU needs to be ready for, right? But the other thing is, I don't think you or I thinks that Graham Harrell is as confident in Jackson Dart's arm as he is in Keaton Slovis.
Yeah.
And so, ironically, it makes you probably lean into the run more. And even though Keontae Ingram is not there, your star running back, you lean into the run with Vi Malapai and with Darren Barlow. And it all sort of works. It all sort of works.
And
it allows you to use Dart's. Take the pressure off of darts. And I think that this shows how much the offense can thrive when you don't put your players out there in a position to not succeed. And if this was always going to be what they were done with Dart, then they should have done it a hell of a lot earlier.
Yeah.
But
there should
have landed on it at some point, I guess.
There shouldn't have been anything stopping them from doing this with Keaton as well.
They should have done it with
because
Keaton Slovis,
because this run game, I mean, this was one of the annoying, listening to the Rod Gilmore in this game was a trip. But one thing that was annoying me is like their shock at how well USC was able to run the ball. USC has been able to run the ball
consistently
over the last couple of years when they've not telegraphed it, and B,
but
committed to it.
Yes, but this year has been significantly better.
Well, and I think that we have seen some of the impact of the new offensive line coach, better blocking schemes, not so vulnerable, I think, off the edges.
I think
that's
a fair assessment considering he's been the change from last year.
Yeah,
sure.
But either way, like the run game has been there certainly this whole season. The run game. It's not anything special. It's not anything that, like, clearly this offense isn't built around it.
Right.
But it could have been more focused around, we're going to just run the ball take some of the sting out of the opposing offense, make them sit on the sideline for a little while, and it help our defense out.
It didn't have to take Drake London getting hurt for them to figure that
but
out.
But Drake London getting hurt contributes to this idea of, well, we can't just throw the ball to Drake London 20 times a game.
Right.
So we're going to have to hand it off a few times as well. And I think with Drake London, USC wins this game. But it is
a bit of a confluence, though, because it's a confluence of things where I don't think they have 100% confidence in the receivers, which I understand. You look at the drops. You look at the drops last week. The key drops
some of the plays.
Kenny Nixon and Gary Bryant Jr. and Taj Washington. Yeah.
And you just see straight up some of the plays in this game that Gary Bryant Jr. couldn't make that Drake London can make, because Drake London is a foot taller than Gary Bryant Jr. and he's a different receiver. Like,
and you put those things together with Dart still being a freshman and as a gunslinger is going to make some throws that maybe Keaton couldn't make, but he's also going to take some risks that Keaton wouldn't have taken either, right?
Like, I feel like Drake London is exactly the kind of receiver that a guy like Dart would thrive with, because Dart will just throw it up to him. Now you have to control that instinct of, well, now you're just going to have Dart YOLO it all over the place.
Threw to him 15 times.
Yeah. But either way, you can then, if you found a balance between the run game as composed in this game, and also then when you need to pass, you can hit Drake London on some of those deep balls, or hit Drake London in a pinch. I think it makes a big difference. So, you know, this USC team was not set up to beat this BYU team. The circumstances around not having Ingram and London aren't good. Just the general gist of what this team is right now is not good. They put up way more of a fight than I think any of us expected them to put up.
Right.
And frankly, you know, it's nice to have a USC game come down to, you can look at a couple moments and think, well, what if that would, like, if they don't call that roughing the passer and USC gets that interception, like, there are a few moments in this game where that's maybe the difference in the game. And if you're USC, just let yourself get in a position where the game is decided only by that one moment or by that second, you know, one of those moments, instead of
versus like the Stanford game where it goes through Drake London's hands a couple of times.
And then suddenly you're down by 28 points.
Right. And then it's hard to come back and say, well, you know, if only this would have happened, which I think still it would have been valid. If only this would have happened, that would have happened. Things would have played out differently. But that argument is so much harder to make when you're down 20-something.
Yeah. Or, you know, if the phantom transport fumble that I still don't know how the ball ended up where it was.
On BYU's last touchdown drive, Algiers fumbles the ball. And you don't see it on camera. I'm not arguing that it wasn't the fumble. I think it was absolutely a fumble.
I just want to know when the fumble happened.
It was just weird that the camera never picks it up, and then all of a sudden you see the other guy just running down the sideline with
it. You're like, what? How did it get there? I've still not identified where the ball is at any point in that play.
Right. It was very bizarre.
Very strange. But again, the game, potentially, that's a moment when, you know, Kalen Bullock makes that tackle on was it a fourth down or a third down? And stops BYU, and like one of those moments changes and USC wins that game. I just want USC to be in a position where we can talk about a handful of moments and that's the difference in the game. Right. And it was just, I don't know, it was just nice. I mean, it's a loss. It's disappointing. I think you and I were both deflated coming over here to start recording, because it was like, well, that's a bummer.
Well, at one point in the game, it looked like, you know, beating BYU is the harder of the two games.
Yeah, maybe they're bowl eligible.
Maybe they will go to a bowl. And then I tweeted that, like, if this is the team that SC sends to a bowl, people would watch.
Yeah.
And in the sense of, like, this game was fun to watch.
Yeah.
Was it the best USC team you've ever seen?
Absolutely not.
Certainly not. Very flawed. They, like
that
we said,
secondary is hard to watch sometimes.
The drive stalled. They got burned downfield. Like, all the hallmarks of all the bad things that you've seen this year still happened in this game. But they fought. They fought through it, and they rebounded, and they made big plays of their own, which they haven't always done this year. Which weirdly is encouraging.
What more can you add? I'm encouraged.
And
I'm
a lot
extremely
of young players,
encouraged.
Right? It was very it was Lake McCree had a hell of a game.
Jackson
Caleb
Dart.
Bullock had a great game.
Yeah.
Darren Barlow had a good game. Jackson Dart had a good. Those are guys that are going to be here next year. You're going to feel good about seeing those guys make play.
Michael Jackson III made a really nice catch. It was only his only catch, but it was a really nice catch. Like, I think there are little moments there that you can cling to as, no, the core, there's some core players in this team that can lead this team to relative success over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Is this core going to win a national title at USC? No, unfortunately, that's not going to be their lot in life. But these guys could, by 2023, maybe they're in the Pac-12 title game and maybe they have something, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel for them to achieve. But, you know, it's just nice to see some fight.
You doubted them? Jeez.
No, I'm not doubting them. I'm just, you know, the turnaround to a national title game is a lot. Yeah, I'm just saying. But
for sure. Anyways, you want to talk, before we wrap this up, you want to talk about the coaching candidate stuff?
Yes. Okay. So since we didn't do an episode earlier this week, and if we did that, it wouldn't necessarily have mattered because things kind of blew up on Friday, on Thursday and Friday, as far as the coaching rumors. So we're just going to get this conversation out of the way in case you're living under a rock. There is a lot of smoke around Iowa State's Matt Campbell right now. Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports has reported that he's the favorite.
The real Pete Thamel, not the
Pete
fake
Thamel,
one.
Not Pete Tharnell. Remember, kids, if you are on Twitter, what you should do today, go on Twitter, make sure you're following Bruce Feldman, Pete Thamel. Who else is the big...
you probably had Dennis Dodd there.
Put Dennis Dodd, Brett McMurphy.
Yeah.
Go to them. Put them on notifications and live through a few dozen tweets of stuff
Wilner's probably worth having
Wilner's
on there.
Having on there.
Yeah.
Like, put them on notifications so that you see their tweets when their actual tweets come out. Do not believe a single tweet that you see retweeted out into the ether, because chances are that's a fake. They're trying to fake you out. The next few days are going to be madness about people getting faked out. Always be skeptical. Double check the... blue check mark, double check the
app. Stay vigilant.
Yeah. Stay vigilant. Okay. But the point is, Pete Thamel has reported, Bruce Feldman has reported that that Campbell is a guy that USC really likes, a guy that USC is looking at. So there's a lot of smoke on message boards. There's smoke from the USC message boards, Iowa State message boards, everywhere. There's just a lot of talk about Matt Campbell. Matt Campbell's season finished on Friday. With Iowa State.
Yep.
So, there, if USC were to hire Matt Campbell, it might come in the next few days. It could happen within the next week.
It could happen.
It could happen. So, we need to have a conversation about Matt Campbell, who has always been your dude for years, has been your dude.
I looked it up. I've been tweeting about Matt Campbell since 2017.
Yeah. So I figured we covered Matt Campbell in the coaching rundown.
Yeah.
But obviously he didn't get a ton of airtime because we had a lot of guys to talk about. So tell me about why make your pitch for Matt Campbell. Is this if this is the hire that USC makes and no one knows anything,
there's no insider information.
We don't know anything.
No.
And I don't think any of the insiders out there know very much either. No. It's all up in the air. We will see how this all develops. Yeah. But Matt Campbell's the guy that everyone's talking about right now. So tell me, what is your pitch for Matt Campbell? Why should people be excited about this being a possibility?
Okay. Matt Campbell is someone who came up from Mountain Union. Big Iowa football guy. I mean, Ohio football guy. Played at Mount Union. Had that winning mentality built into him. Coached at Toledo. Took Toledo from a nothing program at the time into a 9-win team. I believe he won the division there in the MAC. I don't believe he actually won a MAC title. But
he tied for first.
But he took them from like a 3-win team to like a 9-win team and put them on the verge of being a MAC contender for sure, 100%. And then got hired at Iowa State, and essentially did the same exact thing there. Took a team that was coming off 2 and 3 win seasons, and really with this senior class, took them to a Big 12 championship game last year. He's beaten Oklahoma multiple times. And the hallmark of Iowa State football has been they've been pretty defensive-minded. They've had a forward-thinking offense, and they've won the big games and just been very well-coached. Now, won the big games is an interesting thing because we've talked with our friend Kenny Martin from Traveler Hates Thursdays, rest in peace in that great podcast, and he's like, how can you say that when they've never beat Iowa? He never beat Iowa in his time at Ames. Certainly that's a problem. Yeah, never beat Iowa. But he beat Texas. He beat Oklahoma. He beat Oklahoma State this year. Like, they went and beat so many big teams in that conference. And I think that when you're at Iowa State and you're playing with a talent disadvantage, that's what I'd rather have. I'd rather have the guy who wins the big games, loses at West Virginia, rather than the inverse, which is the James Franklin thing, where you win all the easy games and lose the games against ranked opponents. Matt Campbell's the inverse of that. They didn't win every single game against a ranked opponent, but they made every single team earn it if they did, while not having the same talent and being at Iowa State. And I think that, yeah, this year wasn't the best year for Iowa State. They started as a team in the top 10. They went 8-4, I think.
7-5.
7-5.
They'll go into a bowl game, though.
I think you'd want to feel better about them. But I think that if you're Matt Campbell, you are hiring Matt Campbell because of his track record. And his track record is that he took two programs who are not good at football and made them good at football. And if you're USC, that's what you have been lacking. You have been lacking a developer. You have been lacking a guy who has your team well prepared. You have been lacking the ability to go up to a opponent that is better than you and run with them. When was the last time SC faced an opponent that was better than them and looked like they belonged in the same field?
Yeah, and that's I think the ultimate compliment to Matt Campbell is he is incredibly well respected because his teams are well coached. Yeah. They're not perfect, but they're also Iowa State. And the thing that I keep bringing up to people is that to truly understand specific to Iowa State, the level that he has elevated that program, they had won 9 games before he arrived there, like once since 1906. They have never.
That was the year with like Seneca Wallace, right?
yeah, exactly. And it was a little bit of an outlier with that era. But they have never won like 7 games 5 years in a row. And that's exactly what he's already done. He could get to 8 wins.
Yeah.
Like their 8 win seasons are like few and far between in their history.
Yeah.
And he's had 3 8 win seasons, 9 win seasons.
Yeah. And I know the other downside, I've seen people get very upset that Matt Campbell has not come out and talked about winning championships. I don't know how to put this.
When you're at Iowa State, can you actually talk like that?
Well, I think they could have this year. They could have this year after they had won their way into the Big 12 championship game last year, lost the Big 12 championship game to Oklahoma. I think you could have said, okay, we got there to the championship game this year. Our goal is to go back there and win it. I think you could have gotten away with it. However, I would just push back and say, as a USC fan base, I don't think you can spend years being frustrated with Clay Helton's faith family football stuff and wanting to win the Pac-12 South, or and talking about all the championships that he was all the times Clay Helton said that we're going to win championships and all that, and then get around and get upset that Matt Campbell doesn't talk about winning championships. No, Matt Campbell's from Mount Union. They owned Division III for decades. Yeah. The dude like has it ingrained in him. He knows what winning is like. And coaches are different. Are coaches? They're going to talk about coach things. Coach speak is a thing. Pete Carroll All he ever did was talk about wanting to go to the Rose Bowl and win the Pac-12 and control what you can control. He didn't talk about winning national championships every year. Nick Saban talks about the process. Like, all these coaches have different things. Just because they're not saying our goal is to win a national championship by year three or else we're a failure, because that's how fans speak, doesn't mean that he doesn't want those things too. I know there's aversion to that because, well, this is USC and that's what we demand, but I would just say slow the roll with that, because I think that USC fans can absolutely scare people off. And we've talked about it before about Chris Peterson. I've always wondered if Chris Peterson would be a good fit, because I don't know that people would be tolerable of him breaking down the program and really having his say and instilling his control on things, because, oh no, it might not be the USC way. Well, look at the USC way and look at the last 40 years. With the exception of the 9 years that Pete Carroll was here, what has it meant? Not really much. You might as well let a proven winning coach, even without the national championships, put together their cement, because look across the country and look at how the coaches that are winning games and getting into the playoffs are doing things. They're doing things like Matt Campbell does.
Yeah, and quite frankly, there are no actual available coaches who have national title resumes that are actually good. Gene Chizik.
Would you take Pete Carroll right now at 70 years old? No.
Yeah. So the thing on Matt Campbell that I think I want to emphasize is Iowa State is 57th in 24/7 Sports team talent composite rankings, which is behind Cincinnati, behind Colorado, behind Oregon State, behind Purdue. They're way down there, way, way down there. So he has consistently won with lesser talent. He has been pursued by major college football programs.
Yeah.
He has been pursued by NFL franchises, and he has decided to stay at Iowa State. So if USC pulls him out of Iowa State, that means that Matt Campbell, it's implied that he's coming to USC to win championships. Because if he wants to, he could just stay at Iowa State forever and be a legend and be a hero. So the mere fact that if he came to USC, that's baked into the cake, that's what his goal would be. You don't come to USC if you're not intending to take your step to the next level and actually compete for championships on a real scale. The counterpoints to all of these, which you and I are big, we're both big on Matt Campbell. I think it would be a hell of a hire. He's not my number one choice. But my number one choice is apparently staying at Baylor, so there's not much I can do. And my other number one choice is staying at Cincinnati, so there's not much we can do. As far as getting Matt Campbell, it's still a home run hire, as far as I'm concerned. The cons of the Matt Campbell pursuit, just to keep it fair, are he has been at Iowa State for 6 years, and they still have the 57th. Ranked talent composite, and he's been successful there.
Yep.
He's built a program there. Recruiting to Ames is very difficult, but you would almost like to see a higher level of recruiting at this stage.
Can I push back on that a little bit?
I mean, yeah.
School in the greater Cornhusker region, let's just say, gets better recruits?
Well, okay, Iowa is 43rd, so it's not like they're blowing it out of the park. But
that's what I'm saying. I find it hard to imagine that any of those schools are going to, on a consistent basis, have top 40 talent. Iowa, Iowa State, Kansas State, Minnesota, like those schools are not going to have access to the premier talent. So. Yeah, I think in a wonderful world, it'd be great if he was recruiting guys out of Texas more. Yeah, but now he would have access to California recruits.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? And he's the thing is, like, Matt Campbell is a very personable guy. He's got a good personality.
Yeah.
He deeply, deeply cares for his players. He builds trust with his players. So all of those things, it's recruit, like, it, no one has ever said he's not a good recruiter or not interested in recruiting. So there's that. The other knock on Matt Campbell is, I think, a fair knock that you can apply to most candidates that are out there. He has won with lower level talent.
Yeah.
Does that mean he's good with lower level talent? Would everything that he does well translate to five-star talent? I think there is always a question when you're looking at lifting up a guy from a lesser program. But this is where I push back on a lot of people, you know, whether or not you're talking about Dave Aranda, Fickell, Campbell, whether you're talking about dudes in the NFL.
There's an inherent risk with literally
coordinators,
everybody.
Every single hire, the vast majority of hires do not work out. The vast majority of people who move jobs, and this is why, as much as it's frustrating to see these guys all signing extensions and stuff, I think coaches are smarter to sign the extension at the place that they're at and to keep, like, Mel Tucker staying at Michigan State, Dave Aranda's potentially staying at Baylor, Fickell at Cincinnati, Wake Forest, I forget the...
Clawson? Dave Clawson,
yeah. Those guys, I think they're smart to stay where they're at because moving is an inherent risk in terms of will what works where you are now work at a different place. The vast majority of coaches who make that change fail.
Yes, which is why I like Matt Campbell because he's done the same thing at two different schools.
Yes, he did it at Toledo. Matt Campbell...
Now, I guess the pushback would be that Toledo and Iowa State are working against the same restrictions.
Yeah.
Where they are, it's a mid-level G5 and it's a mid-level or a lower-level Power 5. So, like, those schools are probably more like each other than like USC. I will give you that. And every move, every hire is going to be risky. Look at, you know, 4 years ago we talked about with UCLA getting Chip Kelly. We would have said that that was the greatest hire in college football. And it hasn't really worked out completely well, right? So every hire is an inherent risk. Do you have any more cons, or can I wrap this up on Campbell?
The plus, the thing that I would say is if you want to get really excited about Campbell as a prospect, Campbell's profile is closer to Nick Saban's at Michigan State's than the vast majority of coaches that you'll find out there. I mean, Nick Saban coached at Toledo, by the way.
He did.
Yeah. But you look
He's from Ohio, too.
You look at what Saban did at Michigan State, 6-5, 6-6, 7-5, 6-6, 9-2. Michigan State, he was establishing a program. He wasn't wildly successful.
Okay, so the difference here for me, Nick Saban had NFL experience at that point. Matt Campbell didn't.
Yeah. But Matt Campbell has 11 years of coaching, of head coaching experience, which is a very big plus.
I think the other difference is Michigan State, I think, is a step ahead of Iowa State.
Yes.
My point being
is that if you're worried about Matt Campbell hasn't won enough at at Iowa State, he's won as much as Nick Saban did at Michigan State. Now, I am not saying that Matt Campbell is Nick Saban. I would never.
But Michigan State is in a better place than Iowa State has ever been in. So,
Point being is that there's a reason multiple NFL franchises have come crawling to Matt Campbell's door. Yeah.
And the last thing I will say about Matt Campbell, if you would have said in September that SC is going to fire Clay Helton and they're going to ultimately hire Matt Campbell, you would have said that that was a home run hire, slam dunk, all those things. That is exactly what you wanted to hear thing. So if the 7-5 season this year is what scares you away, I get it. But the only thing that the only thing is just, like, remember that this is a track record thing for Matt Campbell. And the inverse of, like, you know, sometimes I think that one of the reasons that guys don't always work out is because they get hot one season and they don't have the knock on Dave Aranda. As much as I like Dave Aranda as a coaching candidate,
but it is a valid knock.
But there is a concern that this was the 1 year that he's been a good head coach because he hasn't had the opportunity to build up many years like this. Whereas Matt Campbell has many good years.
Yeah.
Even if this one isn't his best.
Here's the thing about Matt Campbell. Matt Campbell's floor is very low compared to some of the other guys that you're looking at. I think Dave Aranda's floor could be very low. No, Matt Campbell's floor is very high, is what I'm meaning.
I'm like, what are you talking about?
Matt Campbell's floor is very high compared to like Dave Aranda, where I think his floor...
Here's the thing. At USC, you want to know what the floor is? The floor is Dante Williams and Clay Helton in 2021.
I mean, this is fair.
The floor.
This is the floor,
is the floor.
Yes.
Yeah. So what does that tell you? Like, this is what the floor is.
Yeah.
So if you just bring in an ounce of competency to the coaching staff and everything, you're going to be significantly better. Significantly.
Yeah. We're going to say this. Matt Campbell is just the name that everyone's talking about right now. By Sunday, he could sign an extension with Iowa State, and then we'll be looking at someone totally. Yeah. But he's the one that people are talking about, so we figured we'd address it.
All right, that's a wrap of this thing. We'll be back later in the week. USC and Cal. And then if anything happens in the coaching search, we'll be back for that as well. So,
yep.
Until then, thanks for listening as always. See ya.
See ya.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.